Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the 14th chapter of the book of Yechezkel. And in this chapter, we'll continue the theme of Nevi'i HaSheker, but not just to say that they're bad and they're doing the wrong thing and they're leading the people astray, but in this perek, Yechezkel will put it into the context of also another theme of the book, recognizing or understanding why unfortunate, bad, distressing events are happening to the Jewish people. So that's another recurring theme of the book, meaning suggesting that Yechezkel is living among a group of people who have been exiled, and worse things are happening in Yerushalayim. And it seems like one aspect of the Jewish people's response was that they didn't understand why this is happening to them, and they respond therefore with, I don't know if outrage is the right word, but upset, with distress. And part of what Yechezkel is being told to do by Hashem is to explain it to them and to make clear to them what it is that's going on. The fact that it needs to be explained, though, is itself striking. So see that here in Perek Yud Daled, Pasuk Aleph, Vayavot Elai Anashim, Mizikne Yisrael Vayishvu Lifanai. People of the elders of Israel come to me, and they sit before me. So Rashi and Radak agree that these elders, when they come, did not really intend to seek the Dvar Hashem. So the Radak says it as Shayu Marim Atzmam Ba'im LeDvar Hashem Vakel Gila Elai Et Levavam. They portrayed themselves as if they were looking for Dvar Hashem, but Hashem in the upcoming Psukim will make it clear that Hashem recognizes that that's not their intent at all, and that's not what's going on with them. So that's what happened. Rashi also notes in the same idea, the pasuk is vayavo in the singular, even though there are many of them, and that the pasuk is revealing to us, is already giving us a heads up, that they're coming all with the same exact intent, and that it's a negative intent and a wrong intent. The pasuk bet vayidvar Hashem elai lemor, Hashem's word comes to me, ben adam anashim ha'ele ha'elu gilu lehem al libam, u'michshol avanam na'nu nochach pnehem ha'idarosh idarosh lahem. He says, these people have their gilulim still in their hearts, meaning they still want to worship Avodah Zarah. The Radak points out, the Radak assumes, he doesn't point out, he assumes that they no longer worship Avodah Zarah, but that they wanted to. This is not a Radak here, it's a Radak later on in the Perek. But the Radak later on in the Perek says that these people were looking to still worship Avodah Zarah, but they were unable to because they were in Galut, but their desire to was still a strong aspect of who they were, and that's part of what Hashem is noting and paying attention to here. It's in Pasuk Hey, the Radak, so we'll get to it there, but that's what he says. So that's what Hashem is saying here. And these people are coming, and they still have their connection to Avodah Zarah in their hearts, and Mishal Avonam, their sins are still opposite their faces. They still want to be doing them. Is am I going to answer them? So Idaroshi Daresh, the Rashi and Radak both contrast or distinguish between whether Hashem will answer a request or whether Hashem will answer with a prophecy. So Idaroshi Daresh is, am I going to do what they want? Am I going to give them what they want? Pasuk Dal Lachen Daber Otam Ve'Amarta Lehem Kol Mar Hashem Elokim Ish Ish Mibei Yisrael Asher Ya'aleh Et Gilulav El Libo Mishol Avano Yasim Nochach Panav Uvan Hanavi Ani Hashem Naneti Lo Va Birov Gidulav. So he says, tell them, any people like this, and then he repeats the qualifications. Person who has Gidulav in his heart, he still has all of the evil in his heart, and he still has the sins, Nochach Panav, he's still staying with his path of acting, and he comes to a Navi, so I, Hashem, I may answer him, but Va Birov Gidulav, but I will not do what he wants. Leman Tifoshet Be Yisrael Bilibam Asher Nazor Me Alai Begiluhem Kulam. So the Ma'an Tifosh is that Hashem is saying that I will hold them accountable. I will punish them. So the Radak says on the Ma'an Tifosh, the English has, hold them accountable. The Radak has, the Ma'an Tifosh, she'agaleh lahem gidulei libam. I'm going to reveal to them what it is that they're really thinking. Meaning I'm going to make it clear that I know what they're really thinking and I know what they're really interested in. And then he quotes a Chazal that says that points out that when it comes to idol worship, so as opposed to other sins, Hashem counts idol worship, even the thoughts of idol worship, against the person as if the person had done it. That's the question of being mitzarfa lema'aseh. So usually we say that in thoughts of sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mitzarfa lema'aseh. But when it comes to Avodah Zarah, that's an exception. Hashem is mitzarfa lema'aseh. So here, in our pasuk, that point is that they weren't worshiping idols because they were in galut, and they never picked up. They had not yet, or they didn't pick up idol worship in galut, but they still longed for it. They still missed it. They still wanted it. So therefore, Hashem, when they come to here, Tichezkel, Hashem is saying, I'm going to count it against them as if they are idol worshippers. That's a whole topic of its own. The question of tshuva. We all say, tshuva, you have to admit what you did wrong, and you have to feel bad about what you did wrong, and you have to say you're not going to do it again. But there are plenty of people who don't do that, and nonetheless expect to be able to get some kind of culp, of exculpation, of being freed of their sin. And if you said today, no, in order to get freed of your sin, in order to really move forward, you have to completely reject what was in the past. So it's not so clear how many people will be able to do that, because there are many people who have done things wrong, and they say, yeah, I was wrong, I'm sad that I did it, I won't do it again. But it's not out of their minds. They wouldn't mind doing it again. They may commit not doing it again, or they may not, but they're not. So that's part of what Yechezkel is being told here. He's saying that at least in the case of Avodah Zarah, when they come before him and they still would love to do Avodah Zarah, that is not a mental attitude in which Hashem is going to respond to it. Turn away from these gilulim. Turn your faces away from all of the abominations. Because any of you, of the Jews, or the gerash yagur b'Yisrael, or the strangers who are living among you, the Radak points out, fascinating thing, nireh ki min hakasdim shavu l'da'at Yisrael, mi shegalu l'Yisrael l'tocham, kireu ki elokei Yisrael b'tocham, elokei emet, v'chi yaviru alehem kol asher diber be'ozvam et torato. Radak assumes that what it means by gerash yagur b'Yisrael is not a theoretical discussion that Hashem is saying it's you and anybody who happens to live among you, but there really weren't any. He says no, and we'll get to what the threat of Hashem is. But the Radak is saying no. He thinks that when the Jews, historically, when the Jews got to Babel, and they were being punished for all the things they had done wrong, he thinks there were people in Babel who were sensitive to the workings of the world, and therefore decided to join the Jewish people, which is a striking thing. Meaning, they're joining the Jewish people not because the Jews are winning, they're joining the Jewish people because the Jews are losing, and they had been promised by Hashem in the Torah that they would lose. And therefore, these people say, oh, you see that Hashem speaks accurately and correctly, and what Hashem says will happen, will happen. So I find that interesting, because there are many Jews who wouldn't draw that lesson, who wouldn't learn that lesson. So to see that the Radak is assuming that non-Jews at that time were learning that lesson, especially in a Nevuah where Yechezkel is being told that the Jews had to learn that lesson, and therefore to reject them and tell them what's going wrong with them, that's a striking thing. So he turns away from me, and he puts the gilulim in his heart. This is Hashem's warning. And his various sins he puts opposite his face. And then he comes to the Navi looking for advice for Hashem. Ani Hashem na'ane lo bi. So he says, I am Hashem, and I'll respond to him. So Hashem says, I'm going to answer him. But I'm not going to answer him by doing what he wants. I'm going to answer him by punishing him, right? And in punishing him, I'll reveal to everybody that what he really wanted, what he really was thinking, that his heart was not in the right place. And then I'll make my point clear. So, I find many of these nivuot, and I hope I don't say this too often, but I find many of these nivuot striking in their difference from our modern, or our contemporary, probably is a better word, our contemporary attitude towards these kinds of people. Meaning, I think in contemporary times, people would assume that the best way to handle a person who's on the road is to be nice to him or her as far as they've gone, and to ignore the rest. So that may be true in many cases. But Yechezkel is being told that at least in the case of the people he was confronting and what their specific circumstances were, I don't know. So it could be those circumstances are what differentiate them from what we see today. And that's why today, in fact, it would be the right strategy to just be nice and friendly and let them come back on their own. But it's striking that Hashem is saying that that's not going to be. They come to the Navi, they portray themselves if they care what the Navi says. And Hashem says, nonetheless, I'm not going to give them a nevuah, and I'm not going to give them what they're looking for. Pasuk Tet v'Navi, Ki Futeh v'Dibrei Devar. So now we get into the Nevi'ei Sheker. Ani Hashem piteiti et anaviyahu venatiti et yadi alav vishmati mitoch bnei Yisrael. So Hashem says, when you have a Navi who says, who gets seduced to speak things that Hashem didn't say, I mean, you're talking about a false Navi now. So Hashem says, I am God who lured him to say such things. Venatiti et yadi alav, and I will stretch my hand out over him and destroy him from among the people. So puzzle you, let me just go on a little bit. Venatiti et yadi alav, they'll bear their iniquity, their sins. And the Navi himself will get a punishment at least as much or the same exact as the person seeking the Nevuah, because they're both doing the wrong thing. The person seeking the Nevuah is not sincere. He doesn't really want what Hashem wants. He doesn't really want to know what Hashem wants. He just wants to look like he's what we would call today frum. Something to think about again. I think that also has modern contemporary resonances. And the question of, when you look for what Hashem says, you look for a psak halacha from a rabbi, you look for this, you look for that. You're looking for what Hashem wants, you're looking for what you want. So Hashem is saying that's a punishment, that's a problem. I don't think it's the same problem or as significant a problem if we're talking about a person who is looking insincerely in context outside of Avodah Zarah, let's say, or what we would call relatively minor sins. So I don't mean to say it's the exact same thing, but certainly there are plenty of stories you can gather without much difficulty that highlight that the people involved, even though they're going to a person they think of as holy and as representative of Hashem, who feel comfortable demanding certain things from them in a way that I would find shocking. Just a simple example, I once recently heard a story from a woman who talks about how her or some ancestors of hers had gone to a Rebbe, and she went to the Rebbe and she wanted a bracha from the Rebbe that she would sell a certain piece of property of hers, and the Rebbe gave a bracha that she sold the property. She says, no, I want a bracha, I'll sell the property today. And so whatever the story is, eventually I think the Rebbe gives her the bracha that will happen today, and then it happens today. The woman telling me the story was very proud. She's very proud of the first that the Rebbe had done such a thing for her family, and that it showed how great the Rebbe was. And did not notice what seemed to me striking is that if you believe that the Rebbe has these powers, you believe the Rebbe is such a figure of God, how can you imagine speaking to the Rebbe in such tones, saying, and it has to be today, right? Do me the miracle and do me right now when I tell you have to do it. So that, I think, is not the exact same thing, but I certainly think there are parallels between that and what Hashem is complaining about here, and Hashem is talking about here in terms of Nevi'ei Sheker, in terms of people going to the Navi, pretending or seeming to be interested and sincere and concerned about what Hashem wants, when in fact they are looking mostly or only for their own good and their own interests, in this case, expressed as Avodah Zarah. One of the questions here, though, in Pasuk Tet is that Hashem says, Ani Hashem piteiti, I am God, and I led him to this nevuah. I seduced him into this nevuah. So the Radak thinks that what he's talking about here is something people know from Yitzchak and Shaya with Paro, that they are here being lured into giving false nevuot or being required to give false nevuot. Hashem is tricking them to giving false nevuot because of previous sins that they had done. Sins they had done in private have been sufficient to earn them the death penalty, but there was no way to catch them because they're doing it in private. So therefore, Hashem has given them a false nevuot in public to reveal to everybody what they are, and therefore that they'll get their punishment and everyone understand the punishment that's going on. That is a possibility. Question of that possibility would be, why would it be that Hashem would then go through the whole charade of having to give a false nevuah in public? So you might say the same thing as we say in the case of Paro, that by teaching a lesson, you hope other people will learn the lesson. The question here is whether that's true and whether the cost-benefit, especially if it's true that people are going to the false nevi'im as much or almost as much as they're going to Yechezkel, it seems unclear to me as to why Hashem would choose to set the people up with even more opportunities to make a certain kind of mistake. I'm not saying that the people, maybe it's to test the people as well, and maybe that's what people deserve, because they too are at fault in terms of ever believing in the V.A. Sheker. It's eminently true, it's eminently possible, so that's what's going on. I will just point out that Rashi gives another option. Rashi says that, with Patiti, I seduced this Navi into doing this. Rashi says, Patachti lo petach, so Rashi says it much more carefully, and Rashi is not a philosopher, so I don't know that it's from philosophical consideration, but Rashi says, Patiti, I seduced him, just means I gave him the opening to sin. And that in and of itself could be a problem, could be a challenge, could be a this, and it's Hashem saying that I don't always do that. So, and Rashi quotes that we, our general opinion, a general belief is that habali tameh putchino. If somebody is looking to get into trouble, Hashem won't get in the way so much. That's also a part of free will. So you want free will, or I think many people want free will to be, well, I get to do what I want when it's, I get to do what I want, but then I don't get punished, but I don't have any consequences for it. Or, if there are going to be consequences for it, I get protected from doing the wrong thing. So I think Hashem is saying none of that is true. That, in fact, free will means that you have the ability to do the wrong thing, and if you do the wrong thing, you'll get punished for doing the wrong thing. So that might be, so Rashi is giving, therefore, an option that is somewhat more open-ended or free in terms of what Hashem actually did to get this Navi Sheker to sin. So we did Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph. No, Pasuk Yud Aleph. L'man lo yit'u od beit yisomei acharai lo yitamu od b'chol pishahem v'yuli la'am v'ani ayah lahem le'lokim v'ani um Hashem elokim. So the Hashem is saying the reason why all this is going to happen to the Nevi'im, and this would be similar to if you wanted to follow the Radak's view of why the Nevi'im would be lured into their Nevu'ot, their false Nevu'ot. So this would be, or one would, reason would be that it's to teach a lesson to the rest of the Jewish people, that they'll learn a lesson from there, and that would be very similar to Paro. It, just like Paro lost his free will at some point, so that others could learn a lesson, that would be what Hashem was saying would happen here. I was just saying that in terms of thinking about the time of Yechezkel, whether or not that would be true, that people would actually learn that lesson, I think there's room to question that, and therefore perhaps to prefer Rashi's reading. Now, the Navi, the Perek, seems to go into a different discussion, into a different direction in terms of talking about rules of punishment, reward, not just so much reward, but punishment, and who saves who from punishment. It might be connected to what we had before, because Hashem was saying before that the punishment of these Nevi'im and the punishment of these people is going to be done publicly to make a lesson to everybody else. So you might have thought the people who are a lesson for everybody else would have a different outcome. So we see that it's not going to be exactly true. Vahidvar Hashem Elai Memor, Ben Adam Erez Kitecha Talilim Olma'al, let's say a land as a group sins. Venatiti Adialeh, and therefore Hashem passes his hand over, Veshavarti Lamate Lechem, and Hashem therefore breaks its staff of bread, meaning that stops its ability to find food. Vishlachti Vara'am, and it's going to have famine in it. Vichrati Mimena Adam Uvehema. So when there's famine in a place, its population decreases drastically because people scatter over looking for food. So the Radak on this pasuk points out that it's not every sin that does this; it's only great sins. And he gives the example of Sodom and Amorah, which was a breakdown of complete financial honesty. And then he notes that when it says that the land will be then be made devoid of people, Adam uvehema, people and animals. So the animals, you think to yourself, what are they sin? Why are they involved in this? Caught up in this? So the Radak just says, well, that's to punish the people. There won't even be any animals around. But it also, I think it says something about the idea of an environment. Meaning, nowadays, if somebody is sensitive to the environment, to the physical environment, they recognize not only that the physical environment affects us, but that it's sort of wrong of us to the animals for, you know, if we do whatever we do that hurts the environment, brings on global warming or whatever. So, for example, an example that's common, that's current right now, the polar bears might become extinct because of things that we do. So it's wrong of us to create situations to some extent, unless there's other outweighing reasons, but it's largely wrong to create circumstances that will punish the animals. So here too, the Radak is saying that, I think the Radak is noting, it could be that Hashem will remove the animals from land to actively punish us, but it's also possible that just nemach on the animals, they get caught up in our punishments. And then similar to, as we'll see later in the parak, similar to the possibility that sometimes children might be caught up in their parents' sins, so we'll see that in a second, and lose something for their parents' sins. If that's true, then when parents act, they should know that their actions affect their families. So that we know that's true in other circumstances. So for example, if a parent has a gambling addiction and wastes all the family's money, so if that man or woman thought about it carefully, they would understand that their actions necessarily affect their family, and the money they lose and all the stuff they do hurts the family. So often, too often, people who have gambling addictions, that's part of the tragedy of gambling addictions, they're not able to register that, at least not when they're in the process of losing all of the family's money. So that actions of ours very often affect those around us, and that's what I think Ladav Bema is also pointing out, that if a land sins so sufficiently that Hashem has to punish it, that the animals will be caught up in that as well, and that should be part of our calculus, and when we act in the world, we're affecting not just ourselves, but the world around us. Pasuk Yudalet, Vahiyu Shloshet HaNashim Ha'ele B'tocha, Noach, Daniel, V'Iyov, Heima V'tzikatem Yinatzlu Nafsham, Neum Hashem Elokim. So Hashem brings up that, let's say this land now has three people in it, and Noach, Daniel, and Iyov. So Noach, Daniel, and Iyov are a very challenging group of people to mention, meaning what is the common denominator among them that Hashem is also mentioning? Now the point here is going to be that they will be able to save their lives. They would not be caught up in the punishment for the land. But that's not the end of the point. It says, they're going to save their own lives. So if we go on a little bit before we talk about them, in Pasuk Tevav, the Pasuk says, Lu chaya ra'avir ba'aretz v'shiklata. So let's say Hashem brings wild animals, and they destroy people in the land. So then, and the Radak points out, this is not true of... So the Radak points out that in contrast to the earlier Re'av, where it just says that there won't be a lot of people in it, but people will pass through it, and the same thing would be true of the sword if a land is decimated by war. After that's over, the people can pass through, but when a land is decimated by wild animals who are going to eat people, so that can decimate the land as a whole, because then people won't come to it anymore, at all. And then those three people are in it. So Hashem says they won't save their sons and daughters. They will save themselves, but the land will be desolate. So we'll talk about those two people in a second, but the Radak says on that they won't save their children. So you might have thought they won't save their children means they won't save their adult children. They won't save those around them, even their close relatives. But the Radak thinks it's not true. And this is a striking claim of the Radak. I think it fits in perfectly with traditional views, but not one we think of today. The Radak says, Klamar afilu haktanim sheim b'lo chet, even the minor children. So if it's the minor children, you wouldn't have thought the parents would need to save them because they don't have any sins of their own. And the Radak says, Ki hem yilku ba'avon avodam. They will be punished or they will get caught up in the sins of their fathers. But if we're talking about their fathers, we're talking about Noach, Daniel, and Iyov. V'afilu b'nei ha-tzidikim, even these tzidikim, the Radak says, Ki day lahem shi'atzidu atzmam, k'aya lahem avon shahayu or shahaya darim ben harishayim. Ben rishayim. He says, the Radak says, that when the Pasuk stresses that Noach, Daniel, and Iyov would save themselves and not be caught up in the punishment of their land and of their generation, it's not because they're perfect, it's because they're good enough, they have enough merits to save themselves, but not enough merits to save their children. And they have some sins, and what's their sin? Their sin is they live among evildoers. That's a whole big question. All of that is a kettle of worms. The question of, do children get punished for their parents? And that's a very large part of the question of, let's say, things like, why do bad things happen to good people? One of those kinds of tragedies that we point to is the tragedy of children dying young. It's a terrible tragedy. And then the question would be, is it possible to say that those children die young because it's a punishment to the parents? And you say, well, the children... So that's a whole big question. So the Radak seems to be taking the perspective that the children, until they reach the age of majority, are in some ways adjunct to the parents, and therefore they can get caught up in their sin. And then he says that the ability of Noach, Daniel, and Iyov to live among people who are evil was in and of itself a sin, and a sin sufficient that when the land gets destroyed, the children might get caught up in that destruction as well. Those are striking ideas. Not the main thrust of the parak, though. So the question, the part of the main thrust of the parak depends on how you understand why these three people were singled out. Rashi gives two main options. According to one, Rashi says these are three people who saw the world in three very striking states. They saw the world fine, and then in a state of destruction, and then a state of having been rebuilt. So Noach, it's simple, he saw the world before the Mabul, he saw the world during the Mabul, and then he saw the world after Mabul, so that after the flood. So that's fairly easy. When it comes to Daniel, Rashi suggests that he lived in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, or he himself was in a position of power, and then he was thrown into the lion's den, and then he comes back to being in a position of power. And then Iyov, so it depends on when he lived to some extent, but to some extent he was wealthy, and then he lost everything, and then he was wealthy again. So that would be a possibility, and then the point would be that Hashem would mention these three to say that it's true there are times when things get destroyed, and then they will get rebuilt. So we'll see later on in the Sefer, another theme of the book is for Yechezkel to try to make sure that the people understand that the destruction they're going through now, as distressing and awful a phase as it is not the end of the Jewish people's history. It's not the end of the story, and there will be another binyan. That would be a reason not to mention Noach, Daniel, and Yov. But here it's to make the point that although they're going to be able to live into that next phase, that doesn't mean that other people will, or even relatives of theirs will. So if the Jewish people are being, so it's two-sided here, Yechezkel is implying, and Rashi's reading, is implying there will be another phase. The fact that we are now in exile, meaning Yechezkel and the people he knows, and the fact that more people are going to go into exile after a terrible destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and there will be desolation and all those terrible things, A, it will all go back to being what it was in some valuable ways, but that's not a guarantee that you, any of you, will live to see it, even if you think of yourselves as righteous, or you think you have family members who are righteous, not necessarily going to be true that will help you survive and be there for the rebuilding of what came. The other possibility that Rashi raises is that each of these three people escaped the exact three kinds of punishments that Hashem is promising here. So Noach was saved from Chayara, from animals, because the tradition is that when he was going to the Teva, so all the animals understood or got the picture of what was going on and tried to get in, not the animals that he had already put on onto the ark, but all the others, and Hashem saved him from them and closed the ark from the famine. So there's he quotes a tradition that when Noach is born, his parents say, Zeni and Achaminu Masiyadenu, Meitonim, Meitonim, Minadama Asher Eireva Hashem, from the land that Hashem has cursed. So Rashi understands that to mean that there was a famine going on. And then, from sword is that when the flood started, also the people around him started thinking, you're not going to get into this to ark to try to escape, and they were going to stop him with physical force. So that would be Noach. In the case of Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar kills Jehoiakim, he leaves Daniel alive. So he kills Jehoiakim with the sword. When in the famine, it was that Rashi is assuming that Daniel was in Yerushalayim until it was actually conquered, and there was a famine there in the city for sure. And then from animals, he goes into the lion's den. In the case of Eov, so he's not sure, but he says maybe if Eov, there's a debate in Chazal, there's a debate in Gemara as to when Eov lived. If he lived in the time of Yaakov, there was a famine then, and it goes on like that. The upshot of Rashi's second perspective is that they're being quoted here. So, is that they're being quoted here because these are people who have survived these things. So you would say, well, there are people who survive such things. So Hashem is coming to warn you that while it's true that there are people who survive such things, those people don't necessarily get to save their relatives and would not be able to save their relatives in these situations. The Radak stretches that point. He points out that Avraham, based on Chazal, that Avraham couldn't save Yishmael, Yitzchak couldn't save Esav, and then he says, and Eov couldn't even save himself from Yisurim, from suffering, because he was suffering to get rid of some of the sins that he had that he himself didn't know. So that's an interesting perspective on the book of Eov, right? The setup of the book of Eov seems to be Eov is perfect, Eov is good, and he starts suffering. He doesn't know why. We're not supposed to know why. It's not active. It seems to be that it's suffering that is meaningless and pointless. And that's why he has all these struggles, and that's why we watch him as he struggles and try to figure out what he's doing and what the justice behind all of this is. If you see the Radak then saying no, that in fact Eov had some sins, then the Radak's picture of the book would be totally different. But that's not our discussion right now, because we're in the book of Yechezkel, not yet in the book of Eov, which will come way off in the future of those who are listening regularly to these shiurim. Then the Radak says, as another possibility, that these three were mentioned because they all had trials and tribulations, and they all stuck with it and stayed with Hashem. So what was Noah's trial? Noah's trial, the Radak says, was to build the ark when everybody around him thought he was crazy. So he had spent 100 years building an ark that everybody around him thought was crazy. So that's a very big nisayon, and he trusted in Hashem, and he wasn't afraid they would kill him. And Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den. And Eov has his various sufferings and manages not to fully, not to protest against Hashem in the full kind of way where he curses Hashem and does all these things. So if that were true, then the example of these three being brought up would be that they have this great merit, that they could have gone through the times that the Jews people are about to go through and yet not protested, and yet they would not be enough to save their family. So Pasuk Yud Zayin back in the thing, O cherev avi ala aretz ahiv amariti cherev tavor ba'aretz v'yukhati men adam ve'mao, if I do it by the sword, I'm going to make the land desolate. Shloshan Hashem Ha'ele B'tochan, these people are living there. Chayani Nu Hashem Elokim Le'etzilu Bani Vanot Kihem Levadam Yonatelu, they'd only save themselves. O Deber Ashalach ala aretz ahiv, if it was pestilence that I did, v'shafachti chamati aleha bedam v'achrim mena adam uveima, and I would pour my wrath upon them with blood of the people dying from the pestilence. The Pasukah and Noach, Daniel, Yov, V'tochah, and these three people are there. Chayaninu, Mashem Elokim, Benim Ba'yatu, they wouldn't save their children. Heima, B'tzikatam, Yatzil, and Afsham, the most they could do was save themselves. So, again, depending on how you understand the examples of the three, it's all making similar kinds of points that what you're going through now is bearable. There are people who could bear it, but you should know that even those people wouldn't only be able to bear it for themselves and not be able to affect others. And therefore, to some extent, it's a statement about personal responsibility and understanding the need to take personal responsibility. Even though I'm going to start sending my terrible four terrible punishments, sword and famine and wild animals and pestilence, they're all coming to Yerushalayim, Mimena Adam Vehema, to cut off from the Jerusalem the presence of people and of animals. There will be a pleita, however, Hashem is saying. There will be remnants, people left over. Hamutzaim Bani Vanot, who will be exiled from the city, boys and girls, young ones. Right? Vehinam Yotzim Aleichem, and they're going to come to you, meaning that this Nevuah now is directed to the people who are already in Bavel. They've gone to Bavel. They have not fully learned their lesson, but they're being told they have to be ready for the arrival of these people. Or item et darkam ve'et alilotam, you'll see what they're doing in all their terrible ways. V'nichamtem al harash er havet al Yerushalayim, and then I'm telling you this so you can be comforted about the terrible things happening to Yerushalayim. Eit kol asher havet yala, all the terrible things that I've done to it. And it should comfort you when you see all their terrible ways. The reason it should comfort you is because then you should understand that the punishment that's coming to Yerushalayim is deserved. That what's happening to Yerushalayim is not just some random thing. Hashem has just gone crazy, as it were, and decided to destroy Yerushalayim, but that it was deserved. And you're going to see these people coming there. So if they were honest with themselves, they would have realized it about themselves in particular. But having that not having happened, so Hashem is saying, so now this new influx of refugees, of people who have suffered and people who have lost in these wars, they should at least help you all come to understand what you need to understand and the points that need to become clear to you as to why Hashem is doing all of this. So in the parak as a whole, what you have being put out for you is that the people of Bavel, the people in Bavel, are not apparently yet, have not yet learned their lesson, not gotten the point that they were supposed to be getting. And so Yechezkel is told to send them the point that they deserve, that they have it coming to them, that they're not where they should be, and that Hashem is aware of that and cognizant of that. And they try to fudge the point by projecting a dedication to Hashem or an interest in Hashem that is inaccurate, is completely false, and that Hashem knows that, and that that's not fooling Hashem, as it were. It's not getting Hashem to think anything else. And then saying, and then the other piece of what you need to know is that all of this doesn't, even if you're great, even if you're good, the goodness that we're talking about does not save others. It only saves the person in particular, and that's why the things that are happening to this land in Yerushalayim are going to happen anyway, because even people we think of as great tzaddikim, as great and righteous people, do not have the spiritual wherewithal to save others in their midst, and that is why it's going to happen in this way. And then when those people come and are exiled to you, your proper and appropriate reaction will be to see, to learn, and to understand what it is that's happened, why it is that it's happened, and then from that, to be able to move on to see what it is you're actually supposed to be doing in terms of turning back to Hashem and probably repenting and all those kinds of things. So that the parak is here to make the point and to teach us that our lack of understanding of Hashem's operating system in the world, a lot of times, has to do with our refusal to understand or to be honest about where we are. And then if we paid proper attention to it, we would see exactly it is what it is that's going on. We would understand it, it would become clear, and we would not have to throw up our hands as if there was no explanation for the ways of Hashem in the world, and that's what's going on here. So tomorrow we'll have another parak. It's a very short one. So the extra time I took today will be made up tomorrow because it's only 7 psukim in parak tevav, and we'll do what we can with that. Have a great day.